This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, and welcome to Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me, as usual, is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm not doing great. I think I'm actually going to demand a trade to another podcast.
Oh.
I'm thinking Fast Break Breakfast or something else on a step back, because I don't know. Just you and I, the chemistry, I don't know. I'm not liking it, and I just don't know if I can, you know, I just don't know if my career is going anywhere.
Wow.
You know, with this Over and Back thing. So sorry. I mean, I hate to do it now. I mean, it would have been nice to just like let you know before we started recording, but you know.
I'm a little bit shocked, disheartened, quite frankly.
I'm sorry I had to be like this, but you know.
Wow. This reminds me of something. I'm trying to think.
What?
Yeah.
Tell me.
Perhaps it best talked about in a quote from Magic Johnson on November 18th, 1981, in the locker room after a game at the Salt Palace in Utah. I can't play here anymore. I want to leave. I want to be traded. I can't deal with it no more. And later, it's nothing toward the guys. I love them and everybody. But I'm not happy. I'm just showing up. I play as hard as I can, but I'm not happy. I'm not having any fun. I just want to go. Is that the way that you feel, Rich?
Yeah, no, I'm really not having fun.
All right.
I just show up, really, at this point.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, no, that would be, yeah, whatever you can do. I'll have my agent send some paperwork over, but we can figure out something like that. But no, I'm just kidding.
Okay, all right.
I love my role here on the Over and Back.
All right.
Best NBA podcast on the step back on fan side. So don't worry.
Thank goodness.
Not that it would be the worst to go on Fast Break, because I have a lot of fun over there, too. Yeah. But, you know, I like what I do here. Yeah. So
you just moved to Nashville, though. That might be tough.
Yeah, I'm not really prepared for that yet. But, you know, hey, if they have a competitive offer or whatever, you know, you could take it. You should take it. If, you know, take Keith, right? Yeah. Keith's pretty solid.
Yeah, Keith's a good guy. Yeah.
So. You can take him. So, yeah. Magic, what do you mean Magic requested a trade? What the hell are you talking about?
I know. It's it's interesting because, of course, you know, the Lakers, they were so successful in the 80s, and it's easy to sort of let the obstacles that they had to face, the egos, the drama, all the things that they dealt with that, you know, are, it's easy to sort of let them fade in the background just because of the great success they have. You tend to remember the good things and not remember the great things. And this is also happening still at a time in which the NBA is not, you know, it's getting more popular, but still sort of in the dark days. So I feel like I think a lot of people know about it, but I don't think it's the details of it are quite as well known. And I also don't think that the amount of just drama and controversy that it created and the dent that it put in Magic's reputation are really well appreciated.
Yeah, it's strange because it's really nothing, you know, it's not part of the lexicon of Magic or this Lakers dynasty or anything like that. It's so strange how you really, I mean, you know, I've heard of it before, but like it's just really never really brought up ever, you know what I mean? Like it's something that's very much kind of pushed to the side, this entire kind of ordeal. And it wasn't like it was just this one, you know, frustrated moment. I have a lot of stuff built up to this, to that moment, and then a lot built up even after this as well.
Yeah, so we kind of have to go back to 1979, to beginning of this. Magic Johnson comes in as a rookie. Dr. Jerry Buss is the new owner of the Lakers. He'd bought her from the team from Jack Kent Cook. And a very complicated real estate transaction. We're not going to break that down. But so these two characters come to the scene. Jerry Buss, known for having a new woman on his arm practically every day, like dating young women. And Magic Johnson also enjoyed the young women as well. So they both developed a relationship unlike what owners and players would generally have at the time or even since, which would lead to strife between the team that we'll get to. But At first, everything's great. 1980 season, the Lakers become a dynamic, exciting team and very successful. Lots of glitz, glamour, stars, fast break breakfast, you know, life. The Forum Club opens. There's, you know, sex and drugs everywhere. Everyone's everyone's excited and happy, and the team is winning. The coach that Buss brought in actually was Jack McKinney, not Paul Westhead. McKinney had been an assistant with the Trailblazers under Dr. Jack Ramsey in 77, so was well versed in the league, and he was the architect of the Showtime system. But he sustained a head injury in a bicycle accident after 14 games in the season. Westhead then took over the team first on an interim basis and then permanently. So Westhead, he had been a college coach at LaSalle University, a Shakespearean scholar, used big words, and had kind of a professorial air, which led people to sort of assume that he was a coaching genius. The Lakers would not necessarily agree with that, but – you know, Westhead kept the system that McKinney built to great success. Magic and company led the Lakers to the 1980 championship and great performance in the finals, of course, where Magic fills in for an injured Kareem. His finals MVP with 42 points, 15 rebounds, 7 assists. And Westhead also deftly handled a Spencer Haywood situation. He suspended him after showing up to practice high. He was banished from the team, and the team eventually voted to not include him in the playoff shares, and which Haywood, a situation that Haywood did not handle very well. But Westhead, you know, at least initially was not, you know, things were fine and things were great. It's kind of in year two when things start to go sour.
Yeah, not good. Yeah, things went very sour very quickly, unfortunately. Westhead, you know, of course, as you said, he got a lot of credit for the Lakers' success in the first year. And, you know, a lot of that was his, you know, partially his doing and partially the doing of, you know, prior coaches and the system and all that sort of stuff. Well, that second year, you know, Westhead starts to install a little bit more methodical half-court offense in years two, and the players don't like that. They like running. They like, also they like winning, which they did the prior year, so it's kind of hard to sell them on. Yeah, you know, we did this thing last year, but let's try this now. Let's try a little bit of this. Magic misses 45 games due to injury. Lakers failed to defend their title, losing in the first round of the playoffs to the Houston Rockets. And during the 81 playoffs, Magic and Norm Nixon, who had been closed, had a squabble through the media. Nixon, who was an all-star, saw himself as a superstar. I seem to feel a little bit of jealousy at Magic's success and Magic's, you know, kind of role in the media and as a marketing dynamo and all that sort of stuff that was kind of coming to Magic at this time. And they also argued over, as you mentioned, Magic's close relationship with Dr. Jerry Buss as well, that, you know, he was kind of a getting preferential treatment, you know, a friend of the owner, and that didn't really seat all that well with Norm Nixon or other players. And this didn't help either, because after the season, Jerry Buss signed Magic Johnson to a 25-year, $25 million contract, which would take effect in 1984. The morning after the contract was announced, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wondered aloud, what is he, player or management? We don't know. So he thought no one would be able to talk to Magic. So not good situation right now.
Meanwhile, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar actually asked for a trade to either the Nets or the Knicks right after that. There's a New York Times article reports it, and Buss is asked if he'd be prepared to trade Abdul-Jabbar. He said, I'm not sure. It depends on the situation, how Kareem felt, how I felt, what was offered, what the conditions were. And Kareem is 32, 33 at this point, so he's getting older, and no one, of course, has any idea that he's going to play till he's 42. So, you know, the end of his career seems to be on, you know, seems to be coming relatively soon. It does make some level of sense with the rest of the team so young that they might consider making that move, despite, you know, Kareem still maybe being the best player in the league, certainly, you know, a top five, top 10 player in the league at that point. So
I don't know if I could handle New Jersey Nets Kareem. That just, I don't know.
That would have been weird. Yeah.
That's just really weird. But then he would have won like two titles. No, the Nets would be a charter franchise of the NBA or something like that. But it still feels icky though. Meadowlands. I don't know.
I don't know. Well, I don't want to disparage any Nets fans here. You know,
Well, they know. They know.
I guess they probably do know. Yeah. Hey, they have Jeremy Lin now. I'm sure they're very happy.
Yeah, that roster is just,
I think they'll be a little bit better than people expect, but
yeah, it's just like it's on its face, it looks bad because it's kind of like a laugh, because you're like the game of like name more than four Nets is pretty tough for anybody to play. Right. So I think that, but yeah, I think they'll be okay.
Yeah. I mean, they're not going to be good, but they might be a little fun. You know, it's kind of what I'm thinking. But anyway,
I like Jeremy Lin getting the ball every time down the court. I like that idea. So Anthony Bennett getting his redemption. No, I like this Nets team. Cool.
So one issue that Kareem had was that there were reports that Buss wanted to get Moses Malone from the Rockets. And then, of course, the huge contract from Magic didn't help as well. That, of course, didn't happen with Moses. He would later go to the he was playing one more year with the Rockets and then would later go to the Sixers. Issues do get smoothed over just a few days later, and Kareem is quoted as saying, "A basketball team is much like a family, and when one member has been singled out, oftentimes other people in that family can become jealous."
Always the logic there.
Yeah, it's good logic. I mean, it actually does make some sense. So
no, I'm with him. Yeah, he's like, yeah, you know, he calmed down a little bit, took a deep breath, said, okay, all right, let's talk about this a little bit. It's fine. Yeah. So
in 82, Westhead installs a new offense. It's a heavily structured system that de-emphasizes the fast break and ball movement, and it has a lot of guys running to spots, and doesn't really and instead of it doesn't play it seem to play to anybody's strengths other than perhaps Kareem's, because it's more, you know, kind of getting the ball to him and letting him do the work, which was, you know, the kind of the way that Jerry West did it in the late 70s, and makes a certain amount of sense. But you're not really using Magic skills, certainly, and not the other guy's skills that well, you know, very well as well. They you know, part of their strength was running, and Kareem could, you know, keep up with it. You know, he could stay back when he needed to, and he could fit in as well. And he's obviously a tremendous weapon. And the idea has floated a little bit that Magic might be pouting because Kareem is becoming the focal point of the offense, which I guess is possible, but it does seem like, based on how upset the rest of the team was with Westhead, it certainly wasn't only Magic that had issues with him, and how unpopular he was becoming, that it really probably, I think maybe you could argue that Magic's tactics here were not good, but it's hard to argue that Magic wasn't, you know, making a good decision when it wasn't right in this argument that Westhead was wrong. It's interesting because it's framed right after the situation, right after Magic's trade demand and Westhead gets fired. There's a Sports Illustrated piece by Anthony Cotton, and it's the quote is, "It seems the 42-year-old Westhead, a coach with 11 years of experience in the college and program, felt he had the prerogative to install 25 or 30 new plays, many of which were designed to get the ball into the center." It's really interesting how he, you know, frames it as Westhead is the aggrieved party here, and he had absolute right to do this, and and Magic, you know, is wrong here, and given, you know, kind of what happened afterward, and it seems like obviously that Magic was in the right in terms of being right about how the Lakers should play and what was best for the team, and Westhead was kind of being stubborn. It's interesting that and certainly this wasn't the only case. Magic took a big hit to his popularity after, you know, the perception that he had forced the firing. One other thing that added to a little bit of the tension with the team is that before the season, for the season preview, there is an SI photo that ends up running inside, and it is it has Westhead as the professor, and then the six of the main players: Magic, Kareem, Jamal Wilkes, Norm Nixon, Michael Cooper, and Mitch Kupchak, who just been added to the team from Washington. And it sort of feeds into this idea that Westhead is this, you know, he's described as a, you know, Shakespearean scholar repeatedly in portrayals of him. And he is just a guy who the players think is over his head, but the media thinks of him as a basketball genius.
Yeah, because, you know, he comes in and immediately snaps his fingers and they win a championship. So it's okay. Yeah, it's Paul Westhead, of course. So definitely, yeah, the picture is super interesting as well. And I think we'll try to include at least a link to it in the show description just so you can see it, because I think it's an important picture as well. You can, knowing what was going on, you can kind of feel the awkwardness in it as well. So,
yeah. So eventually Magic asks Buss directly to fire Westhead. Michael Cooper said Magic really came to hate Paul, where most of the rest of the team were bothered by him, but it really got personal with Magic. Buss went to Jerry West and Bill Sharman, who were both former Lakers coaches who are now executives or within executives of the teams, and they believe they say, well, maybe he needs some more time. Let's not fire him yet. There were some reports later on that the Lakers had actually made the decision to fire Westhead two games earlier, but they didn't do it right away. And then when Magic asked to be traded following the Jazz game, it created the perception that he forced Jerry Buss's hand. And the Lakers, in fact, were on a five-game winning streak when Westhead was fired. So you can see that. But given the what's been written later, it seems like certainly Buss wasn't happy with the style of play, and it would feel like showtime to him. But the decision it doesn't really make sense for them to have made the decision to fire him, but just not gone ahead and did it yet. That seems like why would you do that? It just seems like a pointless thing.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And what's funny is is that Paul Westhead, of course, you know, in the 90s and in the late 80s, we know him as the man who did the run and gun offense. So it's just so funny that, like, he's the stuck up kind of let's slow it down kind of guy. And then when he'd reemerge in the NBA, you know, of course, he had a tenure with the Bulls, you know, right after this. It didn't really work all that well. And then he would go to the college ranks, Loyola Marymount, all that stuff. And then he would emerge back in the NBA running this insane style, like way beyond anything even the Showtime Lakers were. Of course, they didn't play any lick of defense. They lost plenty of games doing that style, but it's just so funny that this is the guy that they were pushing and pushing and pushing. Hey, can we run it? Can we run it? Can we run it? And then he reemerges in the NBA and he's like the most crazed maniac ever. You know, it's super funny. I think he still does that style. I think I forgot where he coaches now. I don't know if he's anywhere now. I think he bounces around a bunch, but I think he always sticks to that run and gun style. So maybe he's gun shy now to never go away from that, knowing how his Lakers tenure ended. But yeah. It's just super interesting to see him kind of evolve or devolve or whatever you want to say for his coaching style.
Yeah, and I wonder if there's anything to, like, this is just this going in this direction is just some sort of like hyper reaction to what happened to him, and just be like, okay, that's why I was fired, so now I'm just gonna do this. I'm just gonna go crazy, you know, fast. If that, like, there's anything to that, I mean, I don't know, but it's really interesting that he almost completely changed his the style that he coached. And he's not the only player, not the only coach to do that. Actually, coaches generally do it the other way, where they start off with coaching fast in their career and eventually like get tighter reins on the team and teams go slower. Larry Brown was like that, for instance.
A man we're going to talk about here in a little bit, I believe.
Yes.
Famously went through this transition.
Yes, so. Right, exactly. The night that that Magic demands a trade, Kareem later says that during the night, there are issues with Westhead and Magic. Kareem says that Westhead had told Magic to shut up when he offered input during halftime, I believe. And then Westhead scolded Magic a couple times during the game, in which he felt like Magic wasn't paying attention, and Magic visibly sulking during the game. Westhead and Magic later have a private conversation in which Westhead tells Magic that, "I'm tired of your horse bleep attitude." So, and this, it's interesting because this definitely seems like a little bit of parallel to LeBron and David Blatt, where there was a lot of reading of the tea leaves of feeling like LeBron was subtly undermining David Blatt with the things that he was doing, you know, on the bench and so forth, and like seeming like he was coaching the team and all that sort of thing. It very much feels like there's a personality conflict in that way, and then sort of the passive aggressive response in a way as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously many examples of players and their head coaches not really getting along in that sense. But yeah, when you talk about like a star player sort of superseding his coach in a lot of ways, because, you know, there's, you know, one that I initially think of is, you know, a Dwight Howard and Stan Van Gundy. But that was more of just kind of Dwight being like, I really don't like this guy, like not necessarily like coaching the team or doing anything like that, where, you know, this one was, like you said, Magic was clearly, you know, not saying he didn't, that he just didn't think Westhead was smart. It just a bunch of different things. I think there's just a different level to this one than other normal kind of coach and star quibbles that we've seen so often in the NBA. This one, the LeBron Blatt is a very good, you know, kind of contrast in comparison to this one as well, I think. It really does work.
Magic makes his trade demand, but he, of course, doesn't genuinely think he'll be traded. He's putting pressure on Dr. Buss to finally pull the trigger on Westhead, which he finally does. There's one interesting thing, though. There's a story that's told in Showtime, the great Jeff Perlman book on the Lakers, and also it's been told in other places. When Magic first visited the Buss home after he had been drafted by the team, Magic told Jeannie Buss, who was 18 at the time, that he eventually wanted to play for the Pistons, who were Detroit, of course, near his hometown of Lansing, Michigan. After that, Jeannie told her dad, you know, what he said. And then she says, "My dad didn't bat an eye. He told me, 'Jeannie, don't worry. He may say that today, but the first time he puts on a Lakers uniform and steps out on the forum floor, he is never going to leave.' And of course, that was the truth. The reaction to the comments is interesting. A few players go on the record, including Jamal Wilkes, who says, if Magic got mad at a player, would the player be gone the next day? And Magic was really upset by his lack of teammates' support. Norm Nixon had criticized Westhead off the record for months but wouldn't speak up. A lot of the Laker teammates, you know, they may have agreed that Westhead needed to go, but they thought that Magic handled it immaturely. They also, of course, were worried about Magic's relationship with Buss, Magic's power, you know, clear power they had in the team. So there's a lot of dynamics going on during that time, a lot of drama going on during that time, even if most of the team is in agreement that Westhead, it was probably time for him to go.
Then we had a very confusing press conference. Westhead is fired and a new coach is announced, or two of them, kind of. It's very interesting. So he announces assistant Pat Riley, who was a former Lakers player and announcer, as the new coach, and Jerry West as the, quote, offensive coach. Confusion from the media over who was actually in charge stemmed from that. West really had no interest in being a coach, but he was willing to be an assistant for a short amount of time, and it just did not work at all. Yeah. And then there was lots of...
Yeah, it seemed like Jerry Buss was genuinely confused about who the coach really was. Like, I guess there was a miscommunication between him and Jerry West. The Buss thinking that West was going to be in charge or be able to be permanent coach. He was not really that interested in Riley. And then West, whose coaching years did not go that well, did not want that to happen. And eventually, the Lakers were successful under Riley, and it did become an issue, and West went away. But that for a moment was just like a complete situation of seeming like, you know, no one had any idea what was going on. I mean, that seems like a complete, you know, mess.
Yeah, and absolutely. And of course, a lot of that, the criticism of what's going down and all this, you know, sort of confusion, a lot of it was, you know, being blamed on Magic Johnson, which rightfully so. You know, Nets coach Larry Brown said he'd never take Magic Johnson on his team. And there's a quote from an SI piece by Anthony Cotton. So for the misdemeanor of making Johnson and his buddy, Laker owner Jerry Buss, unhappy by creating an unimaginative offense, one in which, according to the Magic, the team wasn't getting enough shots, Coach Paul Westhead was fired and replaced by his assistant Pat Riley, with former Laker coach Jerry West coming on to coach the offense. Certainly there were no sound basketball reasons for the change. So yeah.
Interesting spin there as well, you know, that,
yeah,
that piece. And the quote after, I think, is really just
that one. Yeah, damn it. Yeah, that one's crazy. So Johnson had undergone an abrupt transformation. The 20-year-old who had the ability to make everyone smile just by walking into a room, onto the court, or into a 7-Up commercial, had turned into a greedy, petulant, and obnoxious 22-year-old.
Yeah,
not the Magic Johnson narrative right there. The greedy, petulant, obnoxious. The Magic Johnson story. I don't know that would have been the case.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I mean, it's just it's unbelievable that was a legit quote being said about Magic. And you know, honestly, rightfully so. I mean, to many people's perception, this was his fault. All this stuff going down.
Yeah.
And all this stuff happened.
And obviously, I don't think either one, you know, fits him. He's, you know, obviously not fully just the happy-go-lucky, the guy who's there to please everyone, but he's not like this evil mastermind either. I mean, he's just, you know, he's a person with the complications and the ego that comes with it being a basketball superstar, but also a guy who, you know, was a good team leader and played well, but you know, was 22 and probably needed, you know, took could use some maturity as well. So it's a mix of all these things. But it's really interesting to see him blasted on that level, given what we know of what happened now. And, you know, probably a lot of it is because, you know, the way that I viewed Magic as, you know, like, he was one of the first players that I became aware of, and I looked up to him a lot as a, you know, as a kid. And, you know, I know you weren't really watching during his playing days, but you are, of course, aware of his legend and probably have a certain reverence for him as well, even despite, sure, despite your Laker hatred. So, so to kind of go back and see, like, oh yeah, yeah, wow, that's, you know, amazing. You know, the hot takes weren't just for today. The hot takes certainly happened in 1981, 1982 for sure.
Yeah, that's one thing you get from the SI vault. Like, people think that it's like, oh, reporters used to just kind of do whatever, and now is the big, like, oh, I say that. But like, reporters would go out there and really, you know, especially columnists and reporters would really go out there and criticize a person if they felt they deserved it. I mean, it wasn't necessarily the I'm doing it just to, you know, and it's not like the Skip Bayless type thing now where it's just like say something stupid to say something stupid, or, you know, Charles Barkley's doing a very good job of that these days. But it was like, you know, a lot of times when they felt something strongly, they would go out there and say, and they back it up. And this is another, you know, Anthony Cotton, another example of guys just going out there and saying, no, this is what I think of Magic Johnson right now. And it's just, it's crazy that, you know, with the frame of reference that we have of Magic Johnson, it's just insane that at any point this was being said about him, and that, you know, what his legacy would be, you know, at this point at 22 years old was really under question of what's the next step for Magic Johnson. Where are we going from here with him?
Yes.
And the Lakers.
Yeah. And it didn't take long for him to win the fans back. There was, you know, a huge uproar in L.A. And during the next game at the Forum, he was booed during intros and the first time he touched the ball and during a lot of the game. But eventually Magic won over the Forum with just an amazing performance. And the cheers came pretty quickly. And as he, you know, as he played great and the team played great and they dominated the Spurs, who had, you know, beaten them pretty soundly just a couple weeks beforehand, you know, at least with the Laker fans, he patched things up pretty quickly. It took a little while with the, you know, the rest of the league. He definitely was booed a lot on the road and he had to deal with that quite a bit. But the team was, you know, pretty immediately a success. Riley went back to, you know, the Jack McKinney wide open full speed game. Magic was in control of, you know, of that, and they were extremely successful. They did deal with some injuries. Kupchak blew out his knee. Kareem missed some time as well. And between January and March, the Lakers barely played 500, but they were able to win 21 of their final 24 games to finish 57-25. They signed Bob McAdoo, who ended up becoming really huge for them in a six-man role, you know, kind of a reclamation project. Of course, he'd been a superstar in the mid-70s, but had bounced around, been a journeyman. Kurt Rambis also emerged that year to really help out in rebounding and diving for loose balls, of course. And they cruised through the 82 playoffs. They swept the Suns and the Spurs, and they beat the 76ers in six games. Riley, he started off as this very humble guy who kind of just was continuing this tradition, and then later would become very overbearing, later be very controlling. Wouldn't really change the system in that way, but he would be very much a guy who tried to impose his will on the players in a way the players very much resented, which led to him eventually leaving the team after they lost in the finals in 89. But it wasn't the same situation as Westhead, because obviously it took much longer. But the way that Riley kind of went from this, you know, this humble coach who was just kind of happy to be there to, you know, becoming this, you know, guy who reading these books and having, you know, this colder personality, the slick back hair and, you know, all that kind of stuff. definitely buying his own hype by the end is pretty interesting.
Yeah, and still kind of doing Pat Riley things.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Even this offseason, still kind of showing the Pat Riley thing. But yeah, he's a guy that's interesting too, because after this Lakers thing, you know, we talk about, you know, Paul Westhead going from, you know, I like to kind of run things a little slower, to becoming the guru of go that he eventually did become, to Pat Riley, who then, as we talked in prior shows or whatever, a man who, you know, run and gun with the Lakers, you know, Showtime Lakers, goes to the Knicks, slows it down to, you know, a little bit of an extent, kind of fits the motif of the league at that time, and then goes to Miami Heat and just completely just destroys any and all pace, and it's just like completely not what you expect of a Pat Riley. And then of course later in the Heat, still never really got back to doing the fast break run and gun Showtime stuff, kind of turned into a coach that became a little bit more of the slowdown stuff. But again, like you said, that happens with a lot of the transition of control. When you're a run and gun team, you're really just kind of saying, hey guys, go have fun, you know, do your thing, you know, I trust you guys to do what you're doing. And then when you, little by little, as you kind of get more in the league, coaches tend to kind of rein it in a little bit, because they want to have a little bit more control, they want to call a little bit more plays, and that's just a natural thing to happen. But with Pat Riley, it seemed to happen very quickly and very loudly, like you're saying. He became you know, no longer the humble man that kind of goes, oh shucks, all right, I guess I'll coach, to becoming, you know, what we know as Pat Riley, and the you know, the archetype of a Pat Riley type coach. So
absolutely. And you talked about Westhead, you know, at Loyola Marymount, Denver Nuggets. He also later won a WNBA title in Phoenix. He's the only coach with an NBA and WNBA title. So he did have impressive career, absolutely. You know, he bounced around a lot in different, you know, in women's and men's leagues and in all different kinds of levels. So
assistant, NBA assistant a few times,
yeah, exactly,
throughout,
yeah,
as well. I forgot where I last saw him. I think it was on the Thunder maybe, or someone's Magic. Bench. Magic maybe, yeah, as well. I forgot.
Mid-2000s, he coached with the Magic with Johnny Davis, I believe. So
yeah.
But Yeah, so, you know, things turned out pretty well for Paul Westhead, but, you know, it is really interesting to look at, you know, the drama that they dealt with and, you know, how it looked like it could have torn the team apart, and they're definitely, but, you know, they were able to keep it together, and how Jerry Buss looked pretty foolish in handling the situation, obviously, despite the fact that, you know, he was the genius owner who, you know, pushed through the right buttons most of the time and led to all that great success. And it just interesting how, you know, no one, no matter how great they are, is right all the time. And we have upcoming shows looking at some of that stuff again. You know, even the most successful people have their failures, but I guess maintain the confidence in themselves and make things work. All right. Well, thanks everyone for checking us out. Check out the Step Back at FanSided at the NBA Vertical that we are a part of. They're doing some wonderful and terrific stuff. You should check that out. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcast. We would greatly appreciate a rating, even more appreciate a review, a 5-star one. Any less than that, you are dead to us. No. That really helps other people.
That's true.
Find
no, it is true.
Yeah. It helps other people find the show and gives us more popularity and more power that we can, you know, later abuse and lead to corruption and, you know, lead to making ourselves worse. And also find us on Twitter and Facebook at Over and Back NBA. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back again soon.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.